Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Man, do we have a lot to get to. What a great sports weekend. I went to a Dodger game. Went to a Dodger game. Saw Baez come in and put out the fire like any fireman should. Those Dodgers got to win. We got very minimal baseball commentary. Got some NBA games. My man Ryan Music established himself as still the producer of the Doug Gottlieb Show with an epic tweet that everybody was sitting there going, that was good. That was good. I went and saw, took my son to the new Avengers movie. I'm not going to give you a full review of it because, well, many of you have seen it and most of you know a lot more about the Marvel Avengers series than I do. I can only tell you this. You better really like it because it is really, really long. I'm just telling you, like, War and Peace is sitting there going, wrap it up already. It is really long. There's a lot stuffed in there. And for neophytes like me in regards to the Avengers series, it's fine. It's good. But if you're waiting for Gottlieb to give you a review as to whether or not you should or should not go, then you probably shouldn't be listening to me for a review of said movie. You go, because everybody goes. But I took three 10-year-old boys. I had one 9-year-old boy. The 9-year-old boy, completely into all the Marvel adventure stuff. He was literally cheering, said it was the greatest movie he'd ever seen. My son was like, when's it over? I don't know any of these characters. And the middle was like, yeah, it's cool. So I ate a lot of popcorn. It's the first movie I've ever been to where I'm like, I bought the refillable popcorn and I went and got a refill twice. I ate a lot of popcorn. I am popcorned out. All right, let's get to it. I got the NFL draft stuff. I got Josh Rosen stuff. Sam Amick's going to join us. We'll continue the NBA conversation. Got NFL, though. Brian Baldinger is going to join us for an hour. Baldy's going to join us for an hour? Great. So we'll talk winners, losers. We'll talk the Josh Rosen thing. What I still think is the biggest thing of the NFL draft had nothing to do with the NFL draft. It did have to do with the Kansas City Chiefs. I think it changed the entire dynamic of the NFL. We'll get to that. But let's start with the NBA playoffs, the Rockets versus the Warriors. The Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Farmers at Farmers. We've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything when it's game time. Have an experienced player help you how to stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Here's James Harden on the officiating.
I just want a fair chance, man. Call the game how it's supposed to be called, and that's it. And I'll live with the results. But especially, we all know what happened, you know, a few years back with Kawhi. Like, that can change an entire series. Just call the game how it's supposed to be called, and we'll live with the results. And it's plain and simple.
Now, for the record, I do think that James Harden is right from this standpoint. Throughout the NBA regular season, when you'd get anywhere near James Harden in a three-point shot, if you made any sort of contact or ran under him, he would get the foul call. Matter of fact, he had over 100 fouls called on three-point attempts this year. I think it was 106. The next closest was below 35, like 33. Like, in other words, two-thirds more than any other individual player in the NBA. Now, look, he goes to the free throw line more than anybody. Like, this is part of his game. And the officiating did change from the regular season. It should also be pointed out that the officiating normally changes from the regular season. This is not abnormal. I don't think he helps himself by falling down every time he shoots a three. I don't think Chris Paul helps it by throwing out his feet and falling down every time they shoot their three. But they are not totally wrong. And the Rockets are sitting there telling us that we don't like them. That we want the, that's essentially what you're saying. The refs don't like them. The refs don't want them to win. I don't think the refs like or dislike them. I can tell you that we as Americans don't like the Houston Rockets. Let's just say it. Let's not code it in any other message. And here's why we don't like the Houston Rockets. Because they embody the two parts of the NBA in the 90s and early 2000s and the new NBA that we don't like. Right? What used to make fun of in the 1980s and 90s NBA? Oh, the ISO ball, right? Give it to one guy and clear out a side. ISO. We didn't like it with Carmelo. It didn't work for Michael Jordan. It worked for scoring points, but that wasn't how he won championships. We've always had a thing about ISO. We've also always had a thing about, man, they let him get away with travels in the NBA. And how many times have you seen James Harden get away with the step back travel or the extra little step travel? You seen that? So if you go back, historically, we don't like that. We also don't like 2019 NBA basketball from this standpoint. Shoot too many threes, right? No one shoots more threes than the Houston Rockets, or at least it seems that way. And the flipping the head back and acting like you get fouled every time you drive to the basket. I don't know if we don't like the Rockets individually. I like James Harden, his story is not that unlikable, but his style in many ways embodies the two parts of this NBA and two parts of the old NBA that we never liked. And so, no, we don't like you. We just don't. Sorry. I mean, you can tell me, you know, you should like, fine. We don't like when you go three-point line to three-point line, play the old man basketball, do we? And we don't like when you throw your head back every time you drive, do we? And we don't like when teams over dribble, 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 one-on-one, do we? No. Oh, yeah, and here's the last thing. I personally think Chris Paul is as good a point guard as has ever played the game. But is there any more thoroughly unlikable player if you're not a Houston Rockets fan? He has to be the toughest, make the tough guy faces, complains about every call, everyone's done him wrong. He never fouls and he always gets fouled. And he's always making mean mug faces like he's the toughest guy on earth. Like, we don't have to get over the Rockets. We're never into them. We just don't like you. And so, sure, you could point out that it's fair to say, the officiating is generally different in the postseason than it is regular season. And these were plays that were called fouls in the regular season. But when you're James Harden, you fall down every time. Or in the previous series, we see you act like you get hit in the throat. And upon further review, you never touched. I'm sorry, we just don't have any sympathy. We don't. We don't. There's plenty of NBA players and coaches I've talked to like, yeah, you know what, he's right. Those were called fouls in the regular season. But, you know, this is kind of how it goes in the postseason. And it's the Rockets. Nobody likes the Rockets. The Rockets are also, their management team is one of those thinks they're smarter than everybody else. Right? Like, I don't know if you saw that story about when they made the James Harden trade. And it was like, wow, they were genius to make the James Harden trade. They were. But they also thought, you know, that James Harden and Jeremy Lin were going to be two transformative stars. One for two is not bad. But they swung and missed on Jeremy Lin, right? We can all agree on that. So, I don't think the Rockets are going to win this series. I do think they're going to win some games. I don't think that the Golden State Warriors are perfect. But when you fall down every time somebody, you shoot a basketball, it's really hard in real time to decide which time you got fouled and which time you just fell down. When I was a kid, we used to use that whole boy who cried wolf thing. Remember that? Don't want to be the boy who cried wolf. Don't be the boy who cried wolf. If you fall down every time, there are going to be times you get fouled and it's not called, but because you've cried wolf so many times, we don't know what's real. You create an environment where every time somebody shoots, you could make the, well, that looked like a foul. So The Rockets are going to sit there and tell you the NBA doesn't like them, that the officiating is against them. I heard Nick Wright on First Things First, 7 of the last 8 times we've matched up. I mean, I meant they have matched up with the Golden State Warriors. He loves the Rockets. I get it. He used to do radio in Houston. The front office is really cool to him. He's totally in on the style, and he's over the Warriors. Got it. The rest of us are telling you, it doesn't necessarily even have to do with, we don't care about the city of Houston. No one's sitting there going like, I don't like the city of Houston. Nobody has any sort of feelings one way or the other against the city of Houston. It's really hot. It's really flat. There's a lot of oil and big money. It's really spread out. And that's about all I have to say about Houston. That's all I really know. I have friends that live there, and they generally like it. But it's really, really hot in the summer. Like crazy, like, okay, just one degree less than the sun hot. That's my feelings on Houston. Doesn't have anything to do with the city of Houston, the Rockets franchise, Daryl Morey. But when you act like you're smarter than everybody and there's parts of your style which embody the parts we don't like of the NBA generally as sports fans from the past and the current era. No, we don't really like you. Sorry, you don't get the benefit of the doubt when you constantly complain and constantly fall down. Hey, look, we didn't like the Spurs either because the Spurs never fouled. Right? Like, really, that should be when Tim Duncan gets a statue out in front of their arena, it should be this, like the two-hand, like where you used to look at refs. I got fouled. I got fouled every time. Every time. Did you get fouled? Sure. There were fouls there. They missed them. They also called some fouls that didn't exist. James Harden drove in, got his shot spiked like it was a volleyball set spike. There was a foul called. There wasn't one there. Nobody mentions that. No, it's not like he shot 14 free throws, dude. And by the way, every time you push off and you stick a shoulder into a guy and step back, you could call that an offensive foul. I hope you do not. And you could call it a travel when he takes the extra step back. I probably think you should. But whatever. If we're going to go letter of every law, then letter of a law is going to be a very unwatchable game, which is what you created with all this flopping nonsense. They've brought European soccer to basketball, and we don't like European soccer because we don't know what's real contact and we don't know what's fake contact. And soccer guys, stop it. Oh, soccer's more popular than it's ever been. Like, okay. More popular than it's ever been is still less popular than hockey. On a daily basis. World Cup, obviously, super popular. But the parts that we don't like, you're doing. And it's hard for us to get behind you. No matter how good you are. And I think James Harden is a remarkable talent. In terms of the array of offensive ability, dude, have you ever seen somebody guarded the way Utah guarded him? They played behind him on his left side, like forcing him in the lane because he's such a good three-point shooter. He's so crafty, creates so much space. You know he goes to his left side. There's literally no straight-up way to guard him. But will you take away from it because of your lack of likability? The style you play, the parts you embody, the things that it brings up in our memory. Anytime you complain about the refs, you come off as a whiner. And teams that are dependent upon the officials to help them win games generally aren't championship caliber teams.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's turn back to the NBA. Sam Amick joins us, NBA insider for The Athletic. And Sam, of course, authored a piece that's out right now on why the Rockets believe that they keep getting screwed by the refs when they play the Warriors. Is that a fair way to kind of tell the layman what they're going to get if they take a deep dive into your piece?
That's fair, Doug. I don't know that screwed made its way into the subject line of their internal memos, but that is definitely the spirit of it.
Okay, so with that in mind, what is the... Have some spoilers for us. Okay, we won't spoil Avengers for people who haven't seen Avengers, but you can spoil a little bit of your article. Why do the Rockets feel like they're getting the bad end of the officiating?
So the quick backdrop I would share is that, you know, as you know, but if listeners don't, the Rockets, by all accounts, are the most analytically minded organization in the league. They kind of led the way on the Moneyball version of the NBA movement years and years ago. Daryl Morey, their GM, is data driven to the nth degree. And with that in mind, what's so fascinating about this situation to me is that what we have learned that I don't think we necessarily knew before is that for a long time now, they have been studying the officiating in the kind of, you know, evidence data driven way that they typically study their team, study the opponent. And they have come to the conclusion that specifically in this matchup with the Warriors, that they've been getting the short end of the stick at all the most important moments for quite some time. I focused on the conference finals last year, and essentially here's the process. The league upon request will give teams a 48-minute report on their games that is the same as the last 2-minute report, which indicates which calls were correct or missed. And that's not something that they share publicly. Also, teams cannot get reports from other teams' games. It's only your games. And obviously, you see both teams in that one individual game. So they audited the conference finals last year and came to the conclusion that if you go line by line and figure out, you know, where they got screwed, to kind of steal your vernacular, the aggregate point total of that series was they were minus 93 when it comes to calls being incorrect. Double digits in 6 out of the 7 games against them, and one game where they had a nominal edge over the Warriors, that was game 2. So there's more meat on the bone than that, but that certainly is, that's the flash point that last night, you know, kind of fueled the raids that you saw after game 1.
All right, let's get to last night, because while I agree there were some calls missed when they ran under shooters, there were some calls gained. Harden drives in once and gets his shot spiked, and he gets a couple of free throws. You know, I thought they missed some fouls. You know, I thought Steph Curry got fouled several times over. I mean, there are plenty that actually even out if you don't only study 1, the last 2 minutes, and 2, the 3-point shooting, which 1, I believe, was deemed to not be a foul.
I hear you. I will say, in general terms, that the league does not seem to be pushing back all that hard against the idea that last night was not a good night at the office for the refs in the Rockets' direction. You know, the first half, Klay Thompson in particular, could have had 4 fouls at halftime, and the Rockets could have had an extra 9-10 points. So, you know, I hear you, and I think the bigger conversation here, that the more I talk about this, the more my interest level kind of skews this way, is that, man, the league's just got a really interesting question on its hands about the approach of being transparent like they have been and like they are, and Adam Silver making that a priority, and having the pitfalls of transparency is what I would call it, because this is now Exhibit A in how NBA teams can weaponize the league's information against them and come to conclusions that, you know, that the league then has to answer for. Because if the teams, you know, their counter would be, well, wait, so we're supposed to get the data, and then if we don't like what we see, we can't say anything? You know, and so that's the thing. We didn't used to have 48-minute reports. And not to get too far in the weeds, I just told this story on a podcast a minute ago. But last night, I shared this whole saga with my wife, who's not a huge basketball fan. And what struck me was the first response she had was, wait, do people think the refs are supposed to be perfect? Like, I don't understand this.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
like, well, that's the spirit.
Well, I would also say this, and you tell me if this is fair. I do think that there's, and now you bring up analytics, I think there's a bunch of things working against the Rockets where people actually don't like them. And stick with me for a second. Sam Amick from The Athletic joining me on the Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. What do people hate about the 80s and 90s in the NBA? Oh, the old ISO ball, right? One guy with the ball, the rest of the, that's the old, and the excessive traveling. Whether it's worse now or better now, it doesn't even matter. It's just that idea has always been the anti-NBA guys, like, well, they just go ISO and they travel all the time. And then what do people dislike about new age NBA? The overuse of analytics, shooting a ton of threes, and throwing your head back and acting like you got fouled every time you drive to the basket, and getting some of those calls, and the constant falling down. And I think they actually embody parts of old generation and new generation NBA that people don't like. And I don't think that, I just don't think that the general public is sitting there feeling bad for them as they would for other teams that maybe didn't get the fair end of a whistle.
No, I don't disagree with you at all about the way all of this stuff hits the fans. I joked with somebody last night that it takes a special type of effort to make the Warriors likable. And last night's events, I think for some fans who might have been on the fence, did that. And I think the Rockets' perspective here is because of their level of competitiveness and the heartache of the conference finals last year and the general idea that they think that they are worthy of being champions in this league, they've clearly decided that they're going to focus more on sending a message to the NBA and the officials that, yes, we expect you to officiate the same exact way you did in the regular season, and you can't change the rules now because you have – this is another one of their assertions, is that older referees, more experienced referees, are less willing to call specifically in three-point shots and the whole landing space debate, that they won't call it consistently the way the younger refs do, that the younger refs are more on board with the quote-unquote new protocol. So they're trying to skew the officiating in this series. That's clearly where their heads are at, with the comments that Mike D'Antoni made after the game, with James Harden being on board with all the same talking points, when they kind of out the refs and say that, hey, by the way, at halftime they told us that they missed four threes. That's the kind of stuff that they're hoping going forward ends up helping them when it comes to the refs.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. How likely do you think they are to win this series?
I don't know how to handicap it, because last night the idea that they were right there, given everything that went on, that James being 9 of 28, Clint Capella being a non-factor, all the different things they struggled with, they're just a hell of a team. So I think it's going to be a long series. I'm not going to get too wrapped up in the psychological aspect in terms of I know that some of the Warriors people feel like this whole thing is an indictment on the Rockets' ethos, and it reveals that the Rockets don't truly believe they can beat the Warriors. There are people with the Warriors who, that's how this all hits them, but it's like, I get that, but then guess what? Game two might come along, and they might smack the Warriors in the face. I think that's still possible.
Seems like a different Kevin Durant since the I'm Kevin Durant rant.
Sure.
Fair?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I just, 100%. It's one of those, I've thought, and maybe I was premature in calling it, but I've thought that the finals 2 years ago were the first, okay, I think he's the best player in the league now because he was better than LeBron in the second half. Last year was hard just because it wasn't really a fair fight, and the J.R. Smith thing. But that's really what this is, right? This is a coronation of a guy who might have been the best player in the league all year long, or the most talented guy in the league all year long. Didn't have the best season, but that feels like that's what this run essentially says.
It does, and it's so. I mean, listen, the way that he got into this is so interesting, because he was in playmaking mode. But he was in early on in the Clippers series, and he was in playmaking mode to such a degree that there's such a weird vibe around the team that you had people around the team that were kind of trying to figure out what it all meant. Is it playmaking mode because that's what's best for the team and the game, or is it almost like the old days when guys would just choose not to shoot because they were mad, and it was it. And it gets back into that whole thing that drives him nuts, which is people trying to read his mind. So he ends up flipping a switch, telling the media, I'm Kevin Durant, y'all know who I am. He's been that guy. Done. It also, though, underscores to me, Doug, if we fast forward to free agency and the whole discussion about what might he do and what might his motivations be, as the whole thing has been, does he want to be, the guy, indisputably alpha male of whichever team he's on, and not have to share that spotlight and do it by himself, so to speak. And last night at Oracle, it's funny, the Warriors fans lately have taken to giving MVP chance to both Steph and Kevin, which I don't remember happening during the regular season. And what makes me kind of chuckle is, if you pulled out one of those decibel, test machines, I would love to know, the numbers on the MVP chance, because it's a real MVP chant for Kevin, but the whole backdrop is it's never as loud as the one for Steph.
Yeah, but we also, we can't take those MVP chants. Blake Griffin was at the line, and they're playing in the playoffs, and I was hearing an MVP chant there. That is the most...
No, but it's more the idea that
I got it.
Warriors fans,
yeah.
These players do care what the fans think, and I think it's that idea that if you're him, And you just kind of feel like, man, I could be out here being better than Michael Jordan for the next 5 years, and these fans are never going to truly appreciate who I am. If that is, in fact, anything close to how he thinks, then you start to understand why he might go elsewhere.
You pointed out that the officiating is not the same regular season to postseason, but isn't that really, in a nutshell, what we learned about the Bucks? Right? Like Brook Lopez, regular season, incredible addition to that team. Postseason, didn't look like he was ready for that moment, as you could say for many of the Milwaukee Bucks. Is that what was on display against the Celtics yesterday?
It seems to be the case. Admittedly, I need to go back and watch that game closer. You know, I had it on. I was dealing with Warriors-Rockets stuff. Right. But, you know, Brook's line was awful. Brook was bad. You know, Giannis, he's been so dominant all year. To see him struggle like that is incredible. I think the conversation with the Bucks, and I think it's fair, immediately goes to Mike Budenholzer and the fact that very well might win Coach of the Year. The system he put in place with those guys was just so perfect for the talent that they had. But it's immediately going to now raise questions about, all right, when you had the Hawks teams with pretty good amount of talent, you know, one of their teams won 60 games in the regular season. You know, he got to the conference finals 1 year, but bounced in the first round a couple of other years, in the second round, a fourth year. So Mike's playoff resume, I think, is front and center at the moment. And then, you know, conversely, you see the other side. I mean, they took it to him. So Milwaukee's in trouble. And Boston, it's just insane how we can talk all year long about the roller coaster they were on and what kind of headspace are they going to be in when it's late April, early May. And right now, I mean, they're looking like a team that might be doing this thing till June.
Last thing, you also have a piece inside the Magic, post-Magic Lakers, and why Jeannie Buss believes Rob Pelinka can rescue the LeBron James era. Weren't we just hearing 2 weeks ago that NBA GMs don't want to do business with him because of his agent past? Like, how will this, in fact, work from their perspective?
Obviously, there's no assurances whatsoever that it will. But the thing that I attempted to get into in that story, and I did kind of enjoy putting it together, is I'm a sucker for explaining, not excusing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like you don't even have to take a side. Like, but you got to at least understand that if anybody's confused about Jeannie Buss's loyalty to Rob Pelinka in light of everything that has happened, you cannot forget that he is essentially Kobe Bryant by proxy. Like, the tie-in between Rob and Kobe is so tight. And, you know, if you go back to October, I wrote a story about, you know, Jeannie had told a tale of how Kobe was the one who she met with when she decided to fire Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak. Kobe was the one who basically told her, and he put it in Game of Thrones, you know, terms, just as Kobe is in this Hollywood version that he is, that you got to go for the kill. And he still has a voice within that organization. He just doesn't have a title. And so she's not coming off that approach that, you know, it's going to have a lot of Lakers ties to management. Kurt Rambis, Linda Rambis are now intimately involved in the inner circle. And, you know, that's just the way they're rolling with it right now. I mean, I continued to hear that there might have been kind of a clandestine search for a higher level executive, a big time name that maybe they try to bring to town. And, you know, I wouldn't completely rule that out going forward, but it does seem like Rob's running the show and they're going to try to get this thing back in the right direction.
Enjoy the NBA playoffs. Doing a great job. Thanks so much for joining us and giving us your unique perspective. Really appreciate it, Sam.
You got it. Thanks, Dave.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And now,
here's Shannon Sharp giving us his thoughts on Raptors-Sixers tonight.
I'm taking the Raps. Skip Jimmy Butler and Harris, Tobias Harris, are not slouches on the defensive end.
Hmm.
And Kawhi made him look second rate. He had it going. I've never seen him play that well offensively. We know what he can represent defensively.
Hmm.
But if he gonna play like that, and then sidekick, Siakam's gonna give you that?
Yeah, look, I think the Raptors are the better basketball team. And I think it's because they didn't really skip steps the way the 76ers tried to skip steps. And by skipping steps, I mean, like, look, the Sixers, they had good shooting. They had talented young players. And I know Colin talks about aggressiveness and teams going for it. They went for it, but they went for it too much. The playoffs are about your starters. But you are going to need shooting. Shooting is incredibly valuable, and they don't have enough, especially coming off their bench. Whereas the Raptors, though they were denied and they made a trade and went for it, they also continued to add with their younger pieces and their bench, trading for Marc Gasol late, the development of Siakam that he was discussing. You know, now you actually have two different point guards. Speaking of point guards, let me just tee you up there, Ryan, because you had Ryan Music had an outstanding tweet.
It's one of my finer works, if not the finest work I've ever done via the what they call the Twitter machine.
What'd you do?
So I was just watching the Raptors over the weekend, and I tweeted, Kyle Lowry is that coworker you have who's a really nice person and you like, but you're still not sure exactly what they do, and you don't understand why they get paid so much more than you do.
Yeah, I would also say that he's a guy who it's a case of regular season versus postseason. It's a different kind of basketball, and guys have a lot more attention to detail on their assignments, and it's one of the reasons that oftentimes he struggles. But your point is really well taken. I thought it was a very good tweet. It's one of those, like, don't get it, right? You're like watching. I don't get it.
Yeah, admittedly, I don't watch a ton of Raptors regular season games. So to say that he may be the type of guy who kind of helps carry him during the regular season and then Kawhi picks up the slack in the postseason, I can't speak to that. But just having watched him over the several years he's been in the NBA and knowing the history that they've had coming up short, and particularly him and his struggles when they had DeMar DeRozan and they couldn't make it past the Eastern Conference Finals, I just look at the situation and you go, he looks like a nice player. But the fact that he is making over $30 million a year for this season and next season forward,
it's crazy.
You're just like, wow, that looks like a really bad contract.
Well, it's one of those, he was paid for his past, and he was arguably their best player going back 3 or 4 years ago when they weren't really a championship team. And they, you know, it's one of the things that average or above average NBA teams run into. Like, do we pay this guy who's really good for us in the prime of his career, or do we let him walk, or do we trade him? And they've been able to make it work anyway. But now, look, in fairness, it's not like Fred VanVleet was great the other night. He couldn't do anything. This is a hard series for a small guard. You know, it's just a hard series for a small guard to play in, because the only guy you can really guard in the 76ers starting lineup is J.J. Redick, and J.J. Redick will wear you out because you got to chase him around. You know, like, you can't guard Jimmy Butler. He's too good and too big. Can't guard Ben Simmons because he's, you know, 6'10". You can't guard Joel Embiid. You can't guard Tobias Harris. You know, and even when they bring in, you know, James Ennis or Jonah Bolden, like, those guys are, or Greg Monroe, like, who are you going to, T.J. McConnell only played 4 minutes. It's the only guy you feel like you have a good matchup against.
It's a great 4 minutes.
Yeah. So it's really, really, it's difficult. It's difficult to be a small guard. You have to be so good on offense. And he hasn't been. He hasn't been. But he was rewarded for past performance. He was an NBA All-Star. The East was weak, and he had a couple of incredible seasons with a different style of basketball. And now he's overpaid. That's one of the reasons they thought about moving on from him at the trade deadline, but they couldn't get any takers to get anything reasonable back in return.
The other thing that was interesting is, you know, we know the Raptors aren't one of those teams that they're going to be constantly putting in primetime games. But there has been this slow realization that with Kawhi Leonard being basically MIA all of last season, plus the fact that I think it was the year before that he got injured against the Warriors, so we didn't even see him for a lot of that postseason, it was almost like people forgot that when Kawhi Leonard is healthy, he is without a doubt, you know, this third best all-around player in the NBA, maybe even the second or first. Like, this weekend you're seeing people like, man, Kawhi's out there getting it done. Like, yeah, he's always kind of been amazing at what he does. I mean, like, he was the finals MVP.
Yes, people have forgotten how good he is.
Right.
I told people, like, I think he's the second best player in the NBA. I thought he was the third best player when LeBron was the best, or LeBron was, you know, he and Durant. I thought he was the because he can guard any position and he can score both inside and out. He's an efficient scorer. He's a very good rebounder. He's not as good a passer as either of the other two. Obviously, neither of them are the passer of LeBron James, but I do think that he has the best post game of the three. Durant's got the best one-on-one game of the three. You know, for people who want to say Giannis, like, look, Giannis is just not that refined an offensive player in comparison to the others. And for, you know, James Harden doesn't play any defense. And Steph Curry's kind of little and also struggles defensively. He and Harden make up for it at times. Steph gives it a better effort defensively, whereas Harden, you know, the way in which they let him play, which is he just kind of goes for a steal, and if you beat him, that's okay. They'll defend you at the rim. But yes, I do think this series will point out that what limits the Raptors is what has limited the Raptors is I don't think you can win a championship with Kyle Lowry as your point guard at this point in his career. I just don't. And I think eventually that'll come to roost. I don't think it comes to roost in this series.